A reading by Farrell Getty. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there were no rootless trees hung with breakable stars. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there were no tinfoil trees and no pink plastic trees and no powder blue trees encircled by 10 electric trains and clever cornball relatives, and where no televised wise men praised the Lord Calvert whiskey. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and softly stole away. He stole away into some anonymous Mary's womb, where in the darkest night of everybody's anonymous soul, he awaits again an unimaginable and impossibly immaculate reconception, the very craziest of second comings. And the angel said to them, "Be not afraid. For behold, I bring you good news of a great joy, which shall come to all people. For to you is born this day a Savior." Then the angel departed. You believe in angels? Ever seen one? Angels are all around us, writes Alma Daniels in her book, Ask Your Angels. Angels intervene at opportune moments. What sorts of moments? Moments when remedies to redeem our broken world may appear and emerge from within us. Such remedies may be among and within us right now, here on Ironbound Road. How does this work? Alma Daniels explains, the remedy for selfishness is service. The remedy for arrogance is humility. The remedy for confusion is the clarity earned by living your code of values. Those kinds of remedies. Truth, kindness, and affirming the positive instead of gravitating toward the negative. These are the values that will help you back into grace. Question, are those the sort of remedies that you can believe in? They are fully ours to embody. It's up to us angels, because there's no one but us. It's us. So once again, the season of Hanukkah, Christmas, the winter solstice, and once again those words such as hope and deliverance enter the vocabulary. What might those whom we love most deeply, what might they be hoping for from us in this season of high expectations? Over and above what may be on wish lists, what is it that we really desire from each other? This time of year, I often return to Auden's remarkable poem entitled, "For the Time Being, a Christmas Oratorio," in which he writes, "To those who have seen the child, however dimly, however incredulously, the time being is, in a sense, the most trying time of all. For the innocent children who whispered so excitedly outside the locked door where they knew the presence to be, they grew up when that door opened," writes Auden. Question, did you grow up when that door opened? Did you grow up when the Santa myth began to fade? What did that myth do for you in those years when it held you in suspense and wonder? Did you tiptoe downstairs in your pajamas after everyone else was in bed and peek around the corner? Did your childhood eyes behold the rapt packages, especially those two odd-shaped packages in the corner, and you wondered, gosh, I wonder if those could be for me? Did you feel special? And when you grew up, when the door opened, did you still feel special and loved? And now, decades later, do you still feel loved? Now, says Auden, we can repress the joy, but the guilt remains conscious. Remembering the stable where for once in our lives, everything became a you and nothing was an it. Remembering the stable. What stable? You know, that birth in Bethlehem around 4 BC of someone named Yeshua, perhaps. I mean, we wise folk know that Bethlehem was almost certainly a creation of the gospel writers to link the historical Jesus to the prophecies of the Hebrew Bible. And so how does the imagery and pageantry of the stable have anything to do with us? Whatever you may believe about the mythology and symbolism of Christmas, I think I would suggest this much, that it represents our own divine birth or rebirth. That is who we are at heart. If we could peel away the shoulds, it is the promise that remains yet to be fulfilled in each of us. Some of you may be able to say, no, I honestly don't have any promise that remains to be fulfilled, and we might chat afterwards. But I suspect for many of us, there is possibility remaining. Wordsworth says it this way, our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises within us, our life star, hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar. So what Wordsworth is saying is exactly what the child in the manger represents, and too often we forget. We go to sleep, the sleep of busyness, the sleep of the meantime. That's what Auden calls it, the sleep of the meantime. What is the meantime? Auden writes, in the meantime, there are bills to be paid, there are machines to keep in repair, irregular verbs to learn, and the time being to redeem from insignificance. Even so, in the midst of our busyness of living in the meantime, a child may be born. Indeed, that divine child in each of us may be reborn. That is a symbol of who we are at the core of our being. Remembering the stable, says Auden, remembering the stable where for once in our lives everything became a you and nothing was an it. You know, let's look at that word remembering. At its best, remembering is not escapism, dredging up the past, bemoaning my condition. There's a deeper aspect of remembering. Just as a surgeon might remember or reconnect a broken or separated member of the human body. In the same way, remembering is a spiritual discipline through which we can reconnect to persons and experiences from which we have become estranged. Let me suggest an experiment for Christmas. It centers around this word, remembering. Reconnecting. The first part of the experiment you can do at home, whether you're living alone or in a household with a half a dozen or with two dozen folks. One way or another, find a person in your life, maybe a family member or friend, invite them for a visit or a conversation, and having their permission for a little of their time, linger a little bit longer with them than your usual passing visits with them, and tell them a story. Once upon a time, I was lost at sea, and I made some stupid decisions, and I learned so much about me and who I could become. And in your full unfolding of your own very particular story, and you're hearing their very particular story, you will reweave the fabric of each of your lives and of your relationship, the demons and heroes, the shipwrecks, and the new possibilities. Because that friend with whom you are sharing your story and who is sharing theirs with you, they will see this as a lens into a new reality, a new part of your relationship, far more profound than what they may have experienced before. The second part of the experiment is this. After the chaos of Christmas morning, wherever you may be, take a while to visit those living alone, whether you know them or not, perhaps in a hospital or assisted living, a shelter for the homeless, maybe someone whom you've never met and for whom you have no practical reason to be there. What ought I say? The only gift that matters is your presence. Perhaps take along kids or grandkids if you like. Often they warm up to new friends very easily. And when you're visiting with someone who might otherwise be alone, consider only this: remembering, reaffirming. Invite them to tell you some of their stories. Tell me about that photograph over there on your wall. I see something that looks very familiar, that looks intriguing. And of course, your most important gift to these folks, just being there, to participate in the shared remembering, the message of promise to lives that could otherwise feel very abandoned. And I'll make a prediction. Here's my prediction. 10 years from now, if you look back on all the Christmases and wonder, well, they sort of blur together. I'm not sure I can separate one from the other. I predict that if you look back, you will remember those Christmases where, for just a few moments, you redeemed the time being from insignificance. You redeemed the time being from insignificance. You know, Christmas sometimes seems to revolve around wishful thinking, fair enough, and the inevitable letdowns when some of the wish lists don't seem to measure up. I got what was on my list, but somehow it's not quite fulfilling. Wishful thinking is wishing for something you don't have. The opposite of wishful thinking, of course, is thoughtful wishing. This is in Forest Church's words. Thoughtful wishing. Claiming what is yours right now. And what we have right now is this day, which is almost spring-like. The sun is sparkling off the waters of Hampton Roads. Being here together in this place of memory and of hope, a promise, carrying on a conversation with other humans. A little while, Jane Riley is going to introduce a conversation which we'll be hosting right here after the service. I hope you will all remain here for that very important conversation. These conversations of remembering and of imagining. This is what we're about. And you know, it's almost a miracle that we're even able to converse like this. We tend to take our lives for granted rather than receiving them every day as a gift. Here's my hope for this congregation, that through all of our encounters, we will be aware to the miracle which is right now. Not somewhere out there or later, but it's here. Willa Cather writes, "Wherever there is great love, there are always miracles. Miracles rest not so much on faces or voices or healing power coming from far away, but our perceptions being made finer." That's what all these cafe conversations will be about. Our perceptions being made finer, so that our eyes can see and ears can hear what is right there all along. So, are you expecting something special, someone special? Guess what? That something special's here. Has been all along. that something special is the time being redeemed. Not the time being pedantically, here we go again, but another kind of redeemed time being. Auden says it this way. The happy morning is over and the time is noon. The happy morning is over. The time is noon when the spirit must practice his scales of rejoicing without even a hostile audience. Therefore, see without looking, hear without listening, breathe without asking. The inevitable is what will seem to happen to you purely by chance. And the real is what will strike you as really absurd. For God will cheat no one, not even the world, of its triumphs.